Good.
I hope it's all
right.
Overflowing personality. That's why I come back.
So, in Hebrews 10, it says, year after year, in verse 1, they make these sacrifices. And the fact they did it year after year tells us what?
It was sufficient.
It wasn't working.
Yeah, yeah.
And what thing is he talking about when he says year after year?
Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur. But then in Hebrews 10:11, he says day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties. Again, he stands, not sits. And he performs them again and again. He offers the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. So, again, he's not talking about Yom Kippur anymore. He's talking about the daily sacrifices. And if you want to find out about the daily sacrifices, go ahead and look at Leviticus. That's that really exciting section in Leviticus about the daily sacrifices. But whether it's the ones that are done year by year, whether he's talking about Yom Kippur or any other sacrifice, it's all the same thing. All right? But in verse 12, we have a once-for-all sacrifice that is effective. And then he quotes again from from Jeremiah 31 in verse 16 and 17. And then, all right, chapter 7 through 10:18 is finally done. We finish it with this statement in chapter 10, verse 18. And where these have been forgiven, sacrifice for sin is no longer necessary. Amen. Great. So now we're going to have our fourth exhortation. And this exhortation is both an exhortation and a warning. Just like the second one was both an exhortation and a warning, and really the third one as well. All right, so here we go. Hebrews 10:19. I've talked about this. I'll say a little bit more about it. This is great stuff, though. It's really amazing and wonderful. All right, so let's read Hebrews 10:19 through 25. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, open to for us through the curtain that is his body. And since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart, with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience, having our bodies washed in pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. This is great preaching material here, the second part. But it says here, we have confidence. Remember, the tabernacle setup was all about unconfidence, if you will. But we can enter confidence with boldness. Imagine walking before the God of the universe boldly. And if you look at some of the prayers, I like Daniel's prayer where he says, God, you know, do this. Do what you said. We can be bold and confident. We have access. That's what it's about. It's about access. In verse 20, he says, a new and living way. New, again, it's that word that means a brand new sort of thing, nothing like the thing before. In a living way. In other words, it's a way that gives life. Open through the curtain that is his body. So is the way through the curtain his body? Or is his body the curtain? That's the question. All right, is his body the way through the curtain? Or is his curtain the body? And it seems like, for some reason, commentators like his curtain is the body. All right? I don't know why they're into that. It's not very compelling to me. But I have to tell you, the majority of scholars go with his body being the curtain. So basically what the argument is, his death was the thing that opened the way, and therefore, and the curtain is, similarly, is the thing you have to pass through. Or perhaps the way through the curtain is his body. You know what? Whatever. I think they're probably both true. All right, so, you know, I believe you could say that his body is the way through the curtain. Or you could say the way through the curtain is his body. And I think probably that distinction doesn't matter. But to me, I believe the sacrifice of his body is the way that we have access. It's through that body we have access to go through that curtain. And that's an image, you know, to help the members of your church to get. You might have to, you know, you have to kind of make that a little bit dramatic, you know, because, you know, the idea of coming through the curtain is something the Jews would get maybe a little bit more than us. All right, the way through the body. And again, Jesus is the pioneer and the perfecter. He's the one that went in there first, and he's the one who's completing and allowing us to come in behind him. He's the first one to pass through the veil and made it safe for us now that he is there, calling us to join him behind the veil in the true sanctuary. So how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the fact that you have access to the true heavenly sanctuary? It's hard to put in words, isn't it? It's because it's a feeling, it's an emotion. Your prayers are no longer hindered. That curtain represented the fact that, you know, they light the incense, and I'm sure if you were back there in the Holy of Holies, I'm pretty sure you could smell the incense. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just a little bit. That's why it was kind of parked right up against the curtain, at least symbolically. But we just walk right in there. He's asking us. In fact, basically his admonition is not just you get to do it. He's saying, you better do it. I mean, seriously, you better walk in boldly. Because that's part of how you're going to make it to heaven. So that's pretty great news.
John?
Yeah.
So I'm sure many of us here have before. I've heard many ministers who will equate us to the Holy of Holies now that we have the indwelling of the Spirit in us. Is that accurate to do so?
What's that? The fact that we have the Spirit living in us?
We are the Holy of Holies now because the Spirit lives
in us. Right, we are the temple. Right, right.
That's not outside the realms, right?
No. In fact, I probably should have made that point. That in fact, there's a sense in which that's true, and there's a sense in which it's not true. It's one of those already but not yet things. But I think that's a very appropriate way to put it. Now you might want to explain yourself when you say that, or you may not want to explain it. It's okay if you don't. You know, if you explain everything, sometimes you spend all your time explaining things, and you never get to really say anything. So, to say that without explaining it to me, that wouldn't bother me at all. All right. So then we have salad time. That's, you know, salad time. You know, let us. You know. All right. And so these are your admonitions.
Awesome.
So if you want to make it, you need to draw near to God. And you need to hold on to that confession. Remember that holding on? That was that thing that kept popping up yesterday morning. Holding on to the hope. The hope that we have. And again, hope in Christianity is not like, I hope that the tax man won't come, or I hope I win the lottery. No, hope is a patient, confident expectation. We have to remember God is faithful. He will take care. He will do what he said he would do. How do I know that? Because by two unchangeable things, God swore on oath that we would enter his rest. Says, let us be concerned about one another. Okay, so basically, faith, hope, and love. What do we need? Faith, hope, and love. Faith, hope, and love. That's that triad there. Now, it's like 1, 2, 3, and then 3 is A, B, C. All right? So 1, 2, 3, except 3 has A, B, and C. So, you know, Christianity is about one another, all right? And there's not a ton of one another stuff in Hebrews. There's not, honestly. But here's your sort of your one another stuff. We need to encourage each other, which means, of course, to give courage. I think you know about this. I'm not going to do a sermon on encouragement. As you say, the day approaching, all right? And there's the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, right? They both had oil in the lamp, so what was the difference?
Some of them were empty.
Yeah, some of them didn't fill it up. And one of the ways we fill up the lamp is by encouraging. Now, wait a minute. I thought I need encouragement. Right? All right, so, but how's that work? It's more blessed to give than to receive. And so your job is not to make sure you get encouraged, right? You don't go to church to get encouraged. You go to church to encourage, but hopefully you'll get encouraged. All right, so we have to be concerned about one another. We need to encourage one another. We need to keep meeting together. And we need to, again, encourage one another. All right, great. I've heard it said that a selfish Christianity is a contradiction in terms. Here's a statement by Barclay. I've used a few commentaries. Barclay's, it's good. I mean, it's Barclay's and it's good. It's not very thorough or complete, but it's great for preaching points. You know, it's really good for that. And he said, no man ever saved a soul who devoted his whole time and energy to saving it. Well, I don't know. I think I buy this. So listen, I'll say it. I'll read it more slowly. No man or woman ever saved his soul who devoted his whole time and energy to saving it. But many a man has saved his soul by being so concerned for others that he forgot that he himself had a soul to save. I think he's kind of overstating a little bit, but I get where he's going on that. So we can do as much to get to heaven by helping other people get to heaven. Now, I wouldn't go as far as that, because the bottom line is, who's the most important person you got to take care of getting to heaven? It is yourself. Yeah. So it's maybe, but I kind of like that anyway. All right, Hebrews 10, 26 through 31. All right, the horror of sin. The word there is hekousis, deliberate, habitual, willful sin. That's the sin that's going to get us in big trouble. I believe Hebrews 10, 26 through 31 is probably the sternest warning in the entire Bible. Certainly, I would say, in the New Testament, although I'm sure it's debatable. So the horror of sin. And you might want to do a sermon on Hebrews 10, 26 through 31. Now, if you do that, you might want to, you know, go back to Hebrews 6, you know, whatever, 13 through 20. But seriously. And by the way, he's using Deuteronomy 17, 2 through 7. Let's go there. Deuteronomy 17, 2 through 7. He's more like alluding to it rather than quoting it. But it's fairly clear if you read that section. There it says, if a man or woman living among you in one of the towns the Lord would give you is found doing evil in the eyes of the Lord, in violation of the covenant, and contrary to my command, has worshipped other gods, bowing down to them, or to the sun, or to the moon, or to the stars in the sky, and this has been brought to your attention, then you must investigate it thoroughly. If it's true, it's been proved that this detestable thing is done in Israel, then take the man or woman who's done this evil deed to your city gate and stone that person to death. On the testimony of two or three witnesses, a person is to be put to death, but no one is to put to death on the testimony of only one witness. The hands of the witnesses must be the first in putting this person to death. And then the hands of all the people, you must purge the evil from among you. That's pretty intense stuff. Pretty intense stuff. And so God says similarly to us, we already read it, but this one's worth reading again. He says, if we deliberately keep on sinning after receiving the knowledge of the truth, no sacrifice for sins is left, but only a fearful expectation and a judgment and a raging fire that consume the enemies of God. Here's the part about Deuteronomy 17. Anyone who rejected the law of Moses died without mercy in the testimony of two or three witnesses. Well, how much more severely? I mean, seriously. Again, the more you've been entrusted with, the more you're expected. If God gave you five gifts, you know, five talents, he expects you, you know, he holds you responsible for five talents. All right, and so the the bottom line is, given what we've been given, then, you know, logically, the punishment, the judgment that would come on us would be even greater. Okay? Luke 12:48. For everyone who has been given much, much will be expected. So again, this is about falling away. The word there is hekousis, which means deliberate, habitual, willful. You know, God is love. And God is justice. And God is holy. Which is He more?
None.
All right? His love is very intense. But His holiness is just as intense. And His justice is just as intense. You know, God's love tends in one direction. God's justice tends in the opposite direction. His love and His justice met at the cross, Romans 3, so as to be just and the one who justifies that who has that faith. So for those who have put their faith in the blood of Jesus, God's love overcomes, if you will, God's justice. But for those who reject Jesus, God's justice overcomes God's love. Not that God's love is any less in either case. Not that His justice is any less in either case. Our choice determines which happens. So His love and His justice met at the cross. His love sent Jesus to the cross, and His justice sent Jesus to the cross. And then we get to decide. But I'll tell you this, it's a terrible thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And Deuteronomy 32:35 talks about God's vengeance. And I believe, in fact, he's actually quoting there. All right? Now, let's finish this admonition. I'll just read it. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on 32 through 39. Anyway, remember those earlier days after you received the light when you endured a great conflict full of suffering. We actually talked about this on Friday morning. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. Other times you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You suffered along with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had a better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. Sounds like Hebrews 6, right? You need to persevere so that when you've done the will of God, you'll receive what has been promised. For in just a little while, He who is coming will come and will not delay, but my righteous one will live by faith. And I know, take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. That's also in Romans chapter 1. Those who by faith are righteous will live. It's translated, the righteous will live by faith. But the Greek is, those who through faith are righteous shall live. But we don't belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed, but to those who have faith and are saved. All right, so his advice then is that we need to keep going, right? All right, Hebrews 11. This is the fifth exhortation, and I think this is kind of, to me, this is the summary exhortation. This is the one, because if you get Hebrews 11, I'm telling you, if you get Hebrews 11, then Hebrews, you got Hebrews 2, you got Hebrews 3, you got Hebrews 5, and you got Hebrews 10. So this is my favorite sermon in Hebrews for sure. So let's spend some time here. All right. Oh, I love, oh, man, I'll tell you. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. Now, by the way, just, you know, I'm going to just start preaching. I'm going to do some teaching, but I'm going to do some preaching here. Okay, got it? I mean, Robert did a lot of preaching, so I get to do a little bit of preaching. Faith is belief in things that are not seen. You know what? Everything that matters is invisible. Every single thing that's important is invisible. And everything that you can see in the end is just a tool. Okay? In order to be faith, in order to have faith, you have to deny your senses. Your senses tell you one thing. God tells you something different. Who are you going to believe? You know, you pick up the newspaper. Does it look like God's in control?
No.
Not look that way. But God's in control. God rules the nations. You know what? Success is the enemy of faith in some ways. Now, would you rather be in a successful church or a not successful church? Now, I've heard a successful evangelism defined as faithful proclamation. That's Jim McGuigan. I like that one. He says, successful evangelism in God's eyes is faithful proclamation. By that standard, Noah was a very faithful evangelist. But seriously, now I want success as much as you do. In fact, God wants success. He wants you to be successful. He wants you to see the fruit of your work. But if you rely on success rather than God, I'm telling you, first of all, that's not faith. You know, I'm feeling good because we had some baptisms. Now, it's okay to feel good, but God loves me. We had some baptisms. Big mistake. So there's a sense in which success is the enemy of faith. The key to perseverance is to walk by faith. You know, faith ultimately comes down to things not seen. And as you look at this chapter, he's going to say this is something that had never been seen. This is something that he did not see. If you can see it, it's not faith. Now, if you can see it through the eyes of faith, that's okay. You know, I can see God doing amazing things. That's faith. All right? Faith is belief in things that are not seen. It requires that we deny our senses. You know, Paul, in Philippians 3, he gave his spiritual pedigree. Jew of Jew, tribe of Benjamin. Hey, Pharisee of Pharisees. In fact, he was trained by the top dog. He was a student of Gamaliel, and he was Gamaliel's top student. His resume, his spiritual resume was maybe the best of anybody in his generation. You know what he says about his spiritual resume? Garbage. In fact, you know what it was worth? He didn't say it was worth nothing. He said it was worth less than nothing. Okay? Because that's something you can see. Now, it's not that God didn't want to have him to have those things. In fact, it's okay even to feel good about having those things, but do not base your faith on those things. I like to think of it this way. Solomon and Paul have already been there. They're the pioneers in this. Solomon said, look, if happiness could be gained through success in the world, I would have had happiness in that. So let me tell you, it's not there. And Paul said, hey, if happiness could be gained through a religious accomplishment, then I can tell you, because I've tried it. It doesn't work. All right? It's through faith. Faith is belief in things unseen. He says that is what the ancients were commended for. All right? And you have to understand that they did not have what we have. That's one of his points. I mean, for them, they didn't have prophecies of the Messiah fulfilled. They didn't have the New Testament. They didn't have Jesus who walked on water. They didn't have the resurrection. They were faithful. Can't we be faithful? He says, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what is visible. What's his point? Everything that you see was created by something you can't see. So which is greater, the seen things or the unseen things? The unseen things are greater. My friend Cook Hung told me a story. He's in Vietnam. And he and his wife were going to Hanoi. They were living in Ho Chi Minh City. They were going to Hanoi to plant a church. And like a week or so before they were going to go, somebody burst in their apartment and beat him to a pulp in front of his wife and kids right there in his apartment. Something about sharing their faith or cop or I don't know what the deal was. And so, but a week later they're going, it doesn't look like a really good idea. He's bruised, you know, black eyes. Looks like probably, maybe I'm going to put off the mission team. They'd been kicked out of their house three times before that for having church there. But anyway, they went there. And a day or so after they got there, a cop knocks on the door. And he says, did you come here to plant a church? It's not looking good, is it? Mm-hmm. What would you say? What would you have said? Cook Hung said, yes. He says, are you the group that teaches unless you give up everything you can even be a Christian? Are you that group? He said, yeah, that's us. And the cop said, well, I want to study the Bible. And he was the first baptism in the church. So, you know, faith involves things that cannot be seen. And we have to remember that. I would do Nebuchadnezzar here, but that's a little bit too much. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous. Now, why was it better? I don't know exactly. He did give the first, you know, the best of his flocks. And I guess a Cain, probably God asked for a meat offering, I guess. I don't really know. So probably Cain would have had to trade with his brother the fruit of the field to get some stuff. And maybe it's too I don't really know what it was. You know, all I really know is Abel was a man of faith. We know almost nothing about Abel. You know what we know about Abel? Well, he died. He was faithful. And when I die, I hope they say about me, now that guy, he was a man of faith. I hope that's what they're saying about me at my funeral. If they say that about me, I'm pretty sure I'm going to make it and I'm going to be with God. Then there's Enoch. It says here that by faith, Enoch was taken away from this life so he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. Before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God, and without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that it rewards those who earnestly seek him. Now, believing that God exists, that's pretty easy. In fact, how people could not believe that God exists, I still have not figured it out. What's wrong with those people? I'm serious. And if a scientist doesn't believe in God, I just think they're not paying attention. Well, that's not the thing that takes a lot of believing in things unseen. Do you believe that if you fully relied on God for everything, not your money, not your reputation, not your education, not your physical abilities, not your parents, not your kids, not your wife, do you believe that if you fully relied for your security on God, that he would take care of you? Do you believe, single brother or single sister, that God could replace perhaps having a spouse with a wife even more fulfilling than that would have been? Do you believe that? Do you believe that God's plan for you is better than your plan for you? Do you really believe that? Can you picture God creating a ministry that saves hundreds or thousands of people, that God could do that through you? Through the eyes of faith, you can see that. What can you see God doing? What can you see God doing? I'll tell you right now, it's more than anything you're seeing right now. And then there's Noah. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, notice that. By warned about something nobody had ever seen it before. You know, my favorite church to visit, it's in Jakarta. Because they believe in stuff that can't be done. They don't realize that you can't do this. If you don't believe me, go visit the church in Jakarta. I'm telling you. It's crazy stuff. I wrote an article on Disciples Today about that. You know, I get a feeling for some examples. All right? But anyway, by faith Noah, when warned of things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By faith he condemned the world and became the heir of the righteous that is in keeping with faith. God says to Noah, build an ark. And Noah says to God, what's an ark? God says, it's a boat. Well, what's a boat? It's a thing like, you know, for floating on water when there's, you know, a flood. All right, help me out. What's a flood? Well, it's when it rains and rains and rains and rains. Okay. Okay, how big a boat? 300 feet long and 80 feet wide. Right. Why should I build such a big boat? Because of the animals. What animals? The animals that are going to come. Why are they going to come? I'm going to make them come. Never heard of that happening before. I've never seen a boat. I've never seen a rain like animals just coming? All right. When's the flood coming? In 100 years. Noah built that ark. Did Noah have the Old Testament? Did he have the New Testament? Did he have brothers and sisters and a church and a discipler? Noah goes home. He says to his wife, her name was Wife. That's a joke. Yeah. Said, not really, but there's Noah's wife, that's all, yeah. Says to his wife, Wife, I had a conversation with God. Hey, he said, we're going to build an ark. She says, well, what's an ark? Well, you know, it's this thing, you know, the water and the flood. So how big? Oh, you know, 200 feet long, 80 feet wide. Okay, Noah. Why such a big boat? Because of the animals, you know. And then she says, now, who told you this? God. Which God? The one you can't see. All right? And then Noah's building this ark, and his neighbor said to him, Noah, what are you doing? You get the idea. Noah preached for 100 years. 100 years. How many converts? Zero. What's the definition of success? Now, how successful is Noah? How many people have been saved because of the faith of Noah? Could you even count them? Okay, Noah believed in things that are not seen. What about Abraham? Oh my goodness. By faith, Abram, when called to go to a place he would later receive as an inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. You see that? I mean, I don't know about you, but I kind of want to know what the plan is. But you know what? If you know where you're going, there's no faith in that. Are you ready for the Christian adventure? I'll tell you right now, if God has a plan different than the plan you have, His plan is better than your plan. And the question is, do you believe that? By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. There's that stranger, that Zenoi. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, when she was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so this, from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sands on the shore. You know what? We need to walk in the footsteps of Abraham, which means we need to leave Abraham. We need to leave Ur. In fact, you know what? If you're a disciple, you already did. Because it says in Romans 4 that Abraham is the father of us all. He is the father of all those who leave everything behind and walk in a foreign and strange land of which they're no longer a citizen, walking by faith. God says to Abraham, Abraham, I want you to go. Abraham says, great, where am I going? I'm not telling you. Why not? Because if I tell you, there's no faith. Okay, when am I coming back? Never. And by faith, Abraham left Ur. But he came home and he said to his wife, you know, Sarai, I've got some good news. We're going to go on a vacation. All right? Pack your stuff. And being like any wife would when they're going to go on vacation, what's the plan? Well, we're just going to go somewhere. Where? I don't know. Well, so what direction? Are you going to go north, south, east, or west? I don't know. Pick a direction and throw a dart. We'll just start walking. Once we get, you know, a certain distance, God's going to tell us where we're going, okay? When you coming back? You know, Abraham lived in a tent. You know, he could have gone back at any time. His security was back there in Ur. That's where his security lay. But instead, he decided to put his security on God, and he lived in a tent. He lived in a place that was merely a picture. I mean, literally, it was the promised land is, right? It's a prefigure, right? Egypt, slavery, wilderness, disciple, life of disciple, in a promised land, heaven. He lived in a place that was a symbol, an illustration, if you will, a parabole. And how much did he gain? He one little tiny plot, a little tiny plot, a postage stamp. That's the most he ever actually possessed. And yet he believed it. Abraham believed. And he didn't just believe that God would give him that land, and he believed that he would have children. So God says to Abraham, you're going to have some kids. You know, and Abraham, he's 90 or so. God says, not only are you going to have a son, his wife, of course, is barren. And, you know, he's looking at Sarah. I don't know, maybe let's say she's 80 years old. And Abraham's saying about himself, I still got it. Yeah. Maybe 90, but I still got it. Sarah, I don't know. Menopause, 30 years ago, 35 years ago. And besides, she never had kids. Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. And God said, I'm going to give you many children. And there's about 12 of them, and 11 of them sitting in this room. I mean, who has more children than Abraham? He's got a lot of children by faith. Are you ready for the Christian adventure? He had many children literally, all right, through his descendant, physical descendants, and figuratively. He's the father of us all. But you know what? We need to follow Abraham out of Ur, but we also need to follow Abraham to Mount Moriah. All right, let's read about Mount Moriah. Hebrews 11. I'm going to skip down to verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. Like I said, figuratively, he received him back from the dead. Abraham was in a tough spot. Because the promise said one thing, and the command said another. So which was he going to believe? Was he going to believe the promise? Or was he going to obey the command? Because the promise was, because Isaac was the promised son. By this time, he's probably 107. I don't know. Okay? The promise and the command were in conflict. So what did Abraham do? He reasoned. He said, all right, Now, one thing I know is if God says it, it's true. So that's the having many children, right? All right, but God's command says to kill him. So how can these both work? I know he's going to raise him from the dead. That's how much faith Abraham had. He had so much faith that he said, I don't know. He just of his own reasoning concluded that's the only way it's going to work. I guess I'm going to kill him and God's going to raise him from the dead. Had that happened? Had anybody ever seen this before? I don't think so. You know, the three people with the most faith in the Bible are Noah, Abraham, and Mary. To me, those are the three people with the most faith. Talk about believing in something not seen. You know what I'm saying? I love it when Mary said, "It is as the Lord says." That was a woman of great faith, believing in things that have not been seen. So, Ur is the place. If you're a Christian, in essence, symbolically, you already walked out of Ur with Abraham, if you're a Christian. But are you going to follow Abraham to Mount Moriah? Mount Moriah is the place where you lay down the blessing that he gave you. He gave you a beautiful wife, but he may take it back. He may take her back. He gave you this opportunity, and he may give you an illness. You don't know. But the question is, do you believe that what God gives you will be greater than what you would have had if you went on your own things? All right? So there you go. This is Chrysostom. The things of God seem to fight against the things of God. And faith fought with faith. And the commandment fought with the promise. Yet Abraham obeyed. And like I said, on Mount Moriah, Abraham offered his one and only son on the same mountain where God offered his one and only son. And on the third day, he received him back from the dead. All right? It's because when he set out from Moriah, his son was as good as dead. Oh, notice this. Did you notice that Isaac carried the wood up Mount Moriah that was going to be used for his own death? Can you think of another only son who carried wood up the same mountain to be used for his own death? And how about this? Who carried the knife? You know, the fact that Abraham carried the knife and Isaac carried the wood. That's pretty awesome stuff. Anyway, Abraham told, and how Isaac got up on top of the wood, there's your not my will, but your will be done scene going on there. Okay, great. Now let's read Hebrews 11, 13 through 16. This is a key passage. Certainly to understand Hebrews 11, but in a sense to kind of get, there you go. Follow Abraham out of Ur to Mount Moriah. Hebrews 11, 13 through 17. All these people, including the ones he hasn't talked about yet, right? He knows the sermon, so he's including the ones he's going to talk about. All these people are still living by faith when they're dead. Let's stop there. You want to get to heaven, right? Let me tell you the secret. Just keep walking. Just keep walking by faith. If you're walking by faith the day you die, you're just going to walk right into the promised land. Just keep walking. Now, I hope you have a really victorious walk with great fruit and all that, but you know what? If you're weak, just keep walking. You know, and Hebrews, hold on. That's the same as just keep walking. He says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers in the earth. People who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. Again, they're seeing something that can't be seen. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, the one you can see, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. God has prepared a city for us. You can't see it, but it's there. You know, if you're a Christian, you're a foreigner. You're a xenoi. We get the word xenophobic. You're a Parapodemos, walking along, which means sojourn or a temporary resident. You know, as Christians, this world is not our home, right? And our citizenship is in heaven. And we're not immigrants. We're not immigrants. If you're an immigrant to a country, what do? You settle there and you try to fit in. If you're an immigrant to America, you try to become like an American. That's the whole idea of being an immigrant. But we're not immigrants. No, we're perpetual aliens. Not, you know, with green skin from a, you know. And we're perpetual, we're temporary residents. Do you get that?
Yeah.
Do you get that? How many here like to fit in?
I like to.
Oh, thank you for being honest.
Yeah.
And luckily, in most things, we can actually fit in. We wear the same clothes. We eat the same food. We have the same language, although we have some goofy language that we maybe should drop, you know, some of that special language. But we're different because, you know, my passport says I'm an American, but it's not true. I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian. I'm not an American. Now, I admit, when they have the Olympics, I moved from America. That's cool. But seriously, and to the extent you get it, then you're like these brothers and sisters. You get it. Abraham lived in a tent the rest of his life. He went from place to place, wandering around in a place that was really just a foreshadow of the things that we have. We have those things. He welcomed it from a distance. We welcome it from, you know, it's just sitting right there in front of you. So you're going to be different. Our constitution is Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And what the things that we value are garbage to the world. And the thing the world values are garbage to us. To us, poverty is riches. To us, mourning is happiness. We're strange. We're not going to fit in. And, you know, again, it's our ethic. It's our worldview that makes us different. And you can go back. You can turn back. Abraham could have gone back. I don't know if Noah could have. I guess he could have jumped out of the boat. I'm not sure if Moses could have gone back, but I know this much. You could go back. In fact, you could go back to Ur, sitting there in that seat right now. But it says they were longing for a better country. And God is preparing a city for us. In my father's house, there are many rooms. If it were not so, I wouldn't have told you. And I'm going to go there and I'm going to prepare a place. And I'm going to call you. You're going to be there with me. God is not ashamed to call us his children. This is a cool quote from Diognetus, but I won't read that. By faith, Moses, he was in the palace. He was in the palace. He had the best clothes. He had the best education. All the girls wanted a date with Moses. And he walked out of the palace. He left it all behind and became a slave. And he lived like a slave. That's what Jesus did. Jesus was up at the right hand of the Father, just like Moses was at the right hand of Pharaoh. And Jesus left. And he came down and he lived amongst slaves, even though he himself was not a slave. Let me see here. I'll just make one point here. Let me see. Verse 26. Hebrews 11:26. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he's looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is
invisible.
You get it? That's his point. I like Joshua. You know the thing with Joshua. Let's see here. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell as the army marched around them for 7 days. God says to Joshua, you're going to take Jericho. Joshua says, yes. What's the plan? Well, go out and march around the city, then come back. do it the next day. Next day, 6 days. On the seventh day, march around seven times. And then the walls are going to fall down. Joshua says, ha ha ha. All right, now what's the actual plan? No, that's the actual plan. Moses comes back and he says, hey guys, I got great news for you. God appeared to me on the road and he told us we're going to take Jericho. They're great. So what's the battle plan? And, you know, they're going around the city. And what were the people in the city of Jericho thinking about these Jews? What's wrong with these people? Are we supposed to be afraid of them? They're wearing themselves. I've been there. It's like 115 degrees. I mean, it's hot. It's like going to the Imperial Valley or whatever. Death Valley. I mean, it's hot. In fact, it's worse than Death Valley. It's more below sea level than Death Valley. Jericho, it's like 500 feet below sea level. And the people in the city are like, ha, 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 what a bunch of fools. Now, who was laughing when the walls came down? They laughed at Noah, didn't they?
Yeah.
You're a fool. But you know what? When the door was closed and it started raining, they weren't laughing at Noah anymore. People are going to laugh at you. They're going to call you a fool. And you know what? In their eyes, that's exactly what you are. Then he talks about these other folks, I could go through that. Basically, by faith, ordinary people did amazing things. That's one of those great sermons. Yes, Kip McKean is a great preacher. That's one of his great sermons. Listen to it. It's Kip, but still a great sermon. You know what I'm saying? They shut the mouths of lions. They quenched the fear of flames. They escaped the edge of the sword. They were stoned to death, sawed in two. That's Isaiah, by the way, who was probably sawed in two. Put to death by the sword. Let's finish out that chapter. All right, let's see here. I'll go with starting verse 37. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and holes in the ground. They were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, that only together with us would they be made perfect. See, they didn't have what we have. Do you get it? These people walked by faith and they had less than a tenth of what we have. I mean, what were they basing their faith on? I sometimes wonder about that. It's really amazing. But they persevered because they believed in a God who cannot be seen. And God is going to call them his children. And they have great plans for us. You know, they could have gone back, but they kept walking by faith. All right, that brings us to Hebrews 12. I was planning on going longer than shorter, but I went medium, so I'm going to go medium and medium, I guess, unless there are questions or thoughts. Okay, so we'll do a quick break. Our long break will be after I finish before Greg gets up, so we'll do a 5 or 7 minute break. Then I'll go for another half hour, 45 minutes, and then Greg will do what he's going to do. Great.
Awesome. Great job.
Okay. Archegos, trailblazer. Okay.